Mexico City is going ahead with plans to tap an aquifer deep underground for drinking water. The decision is raising new questions about water policy in this country, which currently allows for intentional pollution of some of our deep water aquifers. Joining me now is Abram Lustgarten, who reports on the environment for ProPublica, including their ongoing investigation into injection wells. And I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello, Abram.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm okay. One of the things that helped bring an end to the Dust Bowl was tapping the Oglala Aquifer. So should we find Mexico's decision to tap this aquifer all that surprising?
No, not at all. I mean, in fact, aquifers in general are a substantial source of drinking water. I think most people don't realize, even in the United States, at least half of U.S. citizens' drinking water comes from underground aquifers. So it's a well-established and very well-recognized source of drinking water.
And we're going deeper and deeper because of things like the drought we experienced last summer?
Yeah, well, there's a shortage of water, particularly in the American West, but even in the Great Lakes region and the U.S. Southeast. And as water gets more and more scarce, obviously, like any other resource, we're looking further afield and willing to pay more to get it. And one of the ways that can happen, among others, like improving technology and so forth, is to drill deeper for it and look for deeper aquifers. The Earth's full of water. It's always just a question of, which little water reservoir is good enough to drink or good enough to treat and make possible to drink, and how deep do you have to go for it?
Well, how deep are we going to get to these deep aquifers?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, and this gets at the kernel of my reporting, is that, U.S. policy doesn't value water that's much deeper than around 3,000 feet in most cases. They kind of write it off as being too poor quality and too expensive to get to. I started writing about a couple examples where, water-starved American communities are going as deep as 8,000 feet. There's one small town in Wyoming that's going that deep.
That's a mile and a half.
That's a mile and a half. Yep, and then of course this development in Mexico City, where for a much larger metropolitan area, a city of 20 million people, they're going to drill down to, well, they've drilled test wells to 6,200 feet, so almost that far, tapped into a really phenomenally large new source of water that they think they can treat and serve to people's homes pretty economically.
Well, do they have better environmental protections for their aquifers than we have in the United States, the deep ones?
Well, I confess I'm not familiar with the details of their environmental regulations, but that depth is difficult to reach no matter how you try to do it, whether it's oil and gas drilling or to produce water or to dispose of waste. What I have been looking at in the United States is a program that actually allows the drilling of wells for the sole purpose of the deep injection of waste, to basically get rid of our waste, often very toxic waste, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And some of these wells are 15,000 feet deep, some are 10,000, some are 5,000 feet deep. And that program operates with very strict controls in the United States to protect these sorts of aquifers. But then we have exceptions to that rule. And so there's a program within the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that's issued a 1,500 or so permits to allow those wells to inject waste directly into aquifers. And that's kind of the kernel of the issue here is how does our government determine that some water is worth sacrificing and other water isn't?
Is it likely that any of those aquifers will be used for drinking water or for used by farmers as well for irrigating farmland?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really the main point, is that the U.S. regulations appear to be outdated. When I talk with hydrologists, hydrogeologists, and geographers today, they increasingly tell me that we will need every drop of water that we can get our hands on, that it is increasingly likely. When the EPA formulated its policy 30-odd years ago, it assumed that water wouldn't be as scarce as it is today, and it's becoming with climate change. And it assumed that people would never want to pay as much as they need to pay, or municipalities would never want to pay to build expensive water treatment plants or to drill those wells in the first place to reach so far down there, which can be quite expensive. That dynamic is shifting. The whole economics of the value of water is shifting. The policy and the regulations haven't. haven't adapted, haven't evolved with them. And certainly the water experts today, the from the scientific community, say we will use that water one day.
Well, is this deep water, when it's not polluted, pure water? Is it as good as the water we've had in aquifers that were more available in the past?
It varies from location to location, so it's very difficult to generalize. The government, characterizes water according to how many little particles are floating around in it. And to give you a rough idea, it's a scale of 0 to 10,000 parts per million. And generally, water that's 1,000 parts per million or cleaner is good to drink, and anything, more than that needs to be treated. So the question is, how much are we willing to pay to treat it? There are deep aquifers that have very, very clean water. I've been looking at EPA permits across Texas and some of the driest places where the permits that they've allowed for the pollution characterize the water as quote-unquote fresh water. And then, of course, there's water that's dirty but usable, and it falls within the range of treatment and the range of evolving technology. So, again, in Texas, you have cities like El Paso building a $100 million water treatment plant that will essentially take water that, 5 years ago, our policymakers would have said is too dirty and we could never use it. And now that will be their main source of urban supply of water in El Paso and similarly in San Antonio, Texas.
You talk about the expense of bringing that water up, but wouldn't it also be expensive to inject pollutants deep underground? Is it cost effective for companies that want to do that?
Well, it's sort of separate questions. I mean, there's certainly an expense to disposing of waste because we have environmental rules that prohibit disposing of that waste on the surface, for example.
And where would it go otherwise?
Well, that's a challenge. Without a doubt, it has to go somewhere. For a little bit of context, there's 700,000 injection wells to put waste underground in the United States. Only a very, very small fraction of those, are injected directly into drinking water aquifers. So, one possibility that experts expressed to me is to simply use the other wells and don't use the ones that inject into drinking water aquifers. Be a little bit more diligent about enacting the regulations. But others talk about, minimizing the amount of waste or pre-treating that waste so it's not as harmful before it goes underground and so forth. So there's a lot of ways to potentially cut down on that volume.
My guest is Abram Lustgarten, who writes for ProPublica, and we're talking about his investigation into polluted aquifers. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We're talking about things that don't include the latest concern, fracking, which also people are concerned is polluting the aquifers.
Well, it's tangential. There's some similarities between the issues, but it's different. I started looking at the injection of waste underground because of the reporting that I've done on fracking. The question of fracking is could contaminants move, through geology deep underground and contaminate underground sources of water? What I realized when I started looking at this waste program is that it's monumentally larger than the fracking issue. So if you're concerned about, a few million gallons of toxic chemicals from fracking, we're talking about trillions upon trillions of gallons of toxic chemicals that are injected for, for underground waste disposal, a good amount of which, would be injected into these underground sources of drinking water. All industries use this kind of waste disposal, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry or uranium mines or the oil and gas industry. But fracking waste is a substantial part of the waste stream that's injected underground. My reporting has found that there's significant opportunity for contaminants to move around underground, much more so than the scientific, conventional wisdom would suggest. Just last week, there was a report coming out of Florida finding that they injected a test dye into an underground aquifer, and they expected it to take about a year and a half to travel over the distance that they were measuring, and it took a couple days. So the underground connectivity is far more significant. So this is a fracking issue, but it's much, much, much larger than a fracking issue.
And you mentioned uranium. You write about a uranium mine in Wyoming that was allowed to inject hundreds of thousands of gallons of radioactive and toxic waste into an underground reservoir. Is that typical? And since you just mentioned leaching, are we likely to see all that radioactivity leach out into the area around it?
Well, uranium mines are an interesting example because they can't operate without polluting aquifers. It's part of the mining process. Interestingly, that mine in Wyoming, it injects 700,000 gallons per day. It's just an enormous volume. The question of leaching, that's a little bit more difficult. So we're talking about, a waste well in that particular case in rural Wyoming that goes down, about 6,000 or 7,000 feet. And one of the problems here is that there isn't a lot of scientific knowledge or research or testing to really perfectly understand where the water flows, in those deep geological layers. It's generally assumed that it doesn't go very far and that it's not going to leach out into water that we'll use. But what Mexico City's, discovery of this drinking water aquifer and plans to use the drinking water aquifer, what those show us is that, that the deep water may be used in the future. And what the news coming out of Florida shows us is that, water in those deep formations may move further and faster than we expect. So it's really kind of an unknown. I mean, I don't think that with great alarm you can say for certain we're about to have radioactive drinking water across the state of Wyoming. But I'm not finding anything that convinces me that that can't happen either, and there's a lot of evidence that points to the risk.
How much study does the EPA do on an aquifer to determine if it's suitable for waste injection?
Well, it depends. The EPA works with state agencies, so the division of responsibility, is substantial. There's supposed to be a great deal of environmental analysis, and what I've found is that the EPA generally rubber stamps these permits, so it's highly dependent on how diligent the state is in doing their background work. Some places will do more than others. In my analysis, Texas seems to do less. Wyoming seems to do less. Some of these water-starved areas, the EPA certainly has the technology and the experience to do more. What they tell me is they don't have the staff and they don't have the funding, and this program in particular. I mentioned there's 700,000 waste disposal wells of various types. It's just grown a little bit out of control. They don't have the size, the offices and the management and the resources to really regulate it the way they might in an ideal world.
Where does the Safe Drinking Water Act come into this story?
Well, the Safe Drinking Water Act is designed to protect underground sources of drinking water. People are familiar with it to some degree because that's what fracking is exempted from. But the actual purpose of the law, or one significant purpose, is exactly to regulate these kinds of underground waste injection processes. So the Safe Drinking Water Act is the primary law, and it says that you cannot inject waste in a way that either will enter a drinking water aquifer or present a substantial risk to a drinking water aquifer. And it has all sorts of, a thick book of detailed regulations about how you construct a well and how that well is cemented and what kind of metal you use and what kind of tests you use to make sure it's working properly and all that. But the basic gist of it is that it's supposed to keep this sort of pollution from happening. And that's partly why the exceptions to that law that we found, those 1,500 cases of permits to pollute an aquifer, were so astounding to me.
Because those exemptions do not prevent them, these aquifers, from being considered as potential sources of drinking water?
Exactly, because they are bodies of water that were identified as being good enough quality to be a potential source of drinking water, and then they're exempted from protection under the law that is explicitly meant to keep that water pure for future use.
Go ahead.
Well, it's a permit to do exactly what the law is intended to prevent.
Is the EPA keeping track of where these pollution exemptions are being issued? What kinds of things are going into these aquifers and who it might affect?
The simplest answer to that is no, they're not. And, we've spent the better part of a year and thousands of dollars in FOIA responses and research and collecting data trying to understand exactly what the EPA does know. We continue to work on this, to this day. The bottom line is that the EPA's records are extraordinarily inconsistent and incomplete, not only about, how many of these exemptions they've approved, but where they are. If you go to the state agencies, some of them have more complete data, some of them don't. So there's some variety. But, for example, the state of California, another place where water is extraordinarily valuable, the EPA tells me that there's something like, I forget the exact numbers, but on the order of about 19 aquifer exemptions. And I found in 1980 dated records in California a listing of about 200 of them. So there's a real discrepancy. And the bottom line is that no, we don't know exactly which aquifers have been polluted and where they are.
You said that Texas has some of the laxest rules. Texas and California have long histories of oil drilling. Does that mean that many of its aquifers are off limits simply because they are likely to have been contaminated for many years into the past?
Yeah, absolutely. And Texas is an interesting example. Obviously, oil and gas drilling are a very important part of Texas's economy and have been happening there actually since, long before the Safe Drinking Water Act was written. When that law came into place, what Texas did is said that, all these aquifers, and they can't quantify exactly how many, quote unquote, all is, but they just wrote them off as not even being aquifers. They just said, well, they're probably polluted because we've been drilling for oil in these areas for so long, and there might even be some natural oil in that water. So we're not even going to list them as aquifers, and that means that we won't be required to protect them as potential sources of drinking water. So when I went looking for data in Texas, they have some limited data of, what's happening in the very good drinking water aquifers, but they really don't have a thorough inventory of what their total water resources are and which ones have been polluted. They fall entirely outside of the state's permitting program.
Has the EPA responded to your reports?
Over a year and a half of reporting on this issue, the EPA has declined any interviews. I've been able to work with, a number of EPA sources, some confidentially and some, who talk to me outside of the permission of their PR folks. The EPA has answered some questions in writing, but left the toughest unanswered.
Is it possible to remediate aquifers?
It is. It's extraordinarily expensive, and it depends on the situation. You'll find most EPA reports or GAO reports that have been done on the issue will actually list aquifers as impossible to rehabilitate. But then there's an example of the uranium mines, which I've been looking at recently, and while they haven't been successful in restoring some of those aquifers 100%, they do improve them. What they do is they actually put a well down there and they flush out the aquifer. They inject good water and they take out the bad water, and they keep doing it until that water is clean. The thing is, it uses an extraordinary amount of water. It costs a whole lot of money, and it might be possible on a case-by-case basis for very few sites, but on a large scale it's not going to happen. It would require more water than you might get out of the ground in the first place.
Well, the whole idea is, if water is scarce, you don't really want to have to use up a lot of water to make water available. It sounds kind of weird.
Absolutely.
We have a link to Abram's reporting on injection wells on our show page at WNYC.org. We will very soon. My great thanks to you for talking with us again today. We've been talking about polluted aquifers with Abram Lustgarten of ProPublica.
Thanks for your interest in the subject.